Zakt the Mishnah B'Shamay say that when a woman marries based on her own testimony that her husband died, she collects her ksuba. Beis Hillel says she may remarry, but she does not collect her ksuba. B'Shamay said to Beis Hillel, you permit the Isser of Arois, but you don't allow her to collect the money, which is much more lenient. Beis Hillel said, we find that the Rabban did not allow the brothers of the husband to inherit based on her testimony. B'Shamay said, the ksuba document itself says that when she becomes mutter to marry someone else, that's when she's entitled to her ksuba. Beis Hillel ultimately retracted and held like Beis Shammai. Zakt the Rav Chisda said, if the woman does yibum based on her own testimony, the yavam inherits the brother's estate based on that testimony, because the Torah says, once yibum done, he inherits, and yibum has been done. Rav Nachman said, if a woman goes to Bezin and says, my husband has died, so permit me to marry, we allow her to marry and she collects her ksuba. If she says, my husband died, so give me my ksuba, we don't even allow her to remarry because she clearly says this only for the, she says this testimony only to try to get the ksuba. What if she says, permit me to marry and give me my ksuba? Does that mean that she did this for the purpose of the ksuba? Or do we say it's normal for a person to bring up all the issues of the matter in front of Bezin? A second question. If we say that it's normal to state all the issues, what if she does it the reverse? She first mentions ksuba and then asks to permit to be married. Do we say that mentioning the ksuba first shows that's her main intention, or do we say that she may have done so because she mistakenly thinks that collecting a ksuba is what actually permits her, gives her a permit to get married? Take ublep teshayel. Zak the Mishnah, all are believed to testify that a woman's husband has died except for her mother-in-law, her mother-in-law's daughter, her tzara, her yavam's wife, and her stepdaughter. Although they're believed if they testify regarding her get, that's because the written document gives them credibility. Fractionally, do we believe the daughter of her father-in-law? Is the daughter of the mother-in-law not believed because her mother, the daughter-in-law's mother, hates her? The mother-in-law's daughter, I'm sorry, this mother-in-law hates this woman, and therefore her daughter, the mother-in-law's daughter, hates her as well. But the daughter of the father-in-law is different, so maybe that's why it's different. Or do we say that the daughter of the mother-in-law is not believed because she's jealous that this woman will eventually enjoy the inheritance of her mother, and therefore the daughter of the father-in-law is equally as jealous because this woman also, she also thinks will enjoy the inheritance of her father, and therefore we shouldn't believe her either. Zakmar Misha says that five women are not believed. If the daughter of the father-in-law is not believed, the Misha should have listed her as a sixth woman. Mars is not, it's not a riot, because it may have been, maybe that she's not believed for the same reason as the daughter of the mother-in-law. But because it's for the same reason, then maybe that's why she's not listed separately. In fact, our Braisa says that there are seven women who are not believed. Our Mishnah only says five. Mar says the Braisa follows the view of Rabbi Yehuda, who adds a stepmother and a daughter-in-law to the list. Rabbanan said that these don't have to be separately listed because the stepmother is not believed for the same reason as a stepdaughter, and the daughter-in-law is not believed for the same reason as the mother-in-law. Rabbi Yehuda says a mother-in-law hates her daughter-in-law because she will eventually enjoy her inheritance, but a daughter-in-law does not have the same reason to hate her mother-in-law. Similarly, a stepdaughter hates her stepmother because she enjoys the inheritance of her mother, but there's no reason for the stepmother to hate her stepdaughter. In fact, if so, why are these two women not believed? Mar says a daughter-in-law hates her mother-in-law because she tells her son all the bad things that she sees in the daughter-in-law. Similarly, a stepdaughter tells her father all the bad things that she sees in her stepmother, and that's why they're considered to be hating each other. Rav Acha bar Avya asked, what about a future mother-in-law, the mother-in-law of her yavam? Is she believed? Do we say that she already hates her for the potential marriage to her son or not? Abraisa says, if a woman says that her husband died and then her father-in-law died, she's believed for herself, but she's not believed for her mother, and her mother-in-law would not be able to remarry. Now, if her husband was overseas, her mother-in-law was not bothering her because her son is not here for her to tell all about the daughter-in-law's bad habits or traits, whatever it is. And still we see she's not believed because of the prospect of the future hatred. Mar says, no, maybe that in that case she's not believed because she has already experienced the hatred before they went overseas. Zak the Mishnah, if a single witness said that a woman's husband died and she therefore remarried, and then another witness came and said that he did not die, she doesn't have to get divorced. One-to-one, she doesn't have to get divorced. So a single witness said that a woman's husband died, and then two witnesses came and said that he did not die. So if she had gotten married based on the first witness's testimony, she has to now divorce. If two, Zak the Mishnah, if two witnesses said that he died, and then one witness came and said that he did not die, so even if she did not marry before the single witness came, she can still get married now after the single witness came, because she has two witnesses to rely on that he has died. The Mishnah's first case seems to say that the reason we disregard the second witness's testimony is only because she had already married. It seems that if she had not yet gotten married, she would not be allowed to get married now, since that second single witness came and contradicted the first witness. However, Ula has taught that wherever the Torah believed one witness, it's given the credibility of two witnesses, and therefore the second witness should not be believed at all when compared to that first witness. Mar says, the Mishnah should be understood as saying that if one witness has said he died, she's mutter to remarry. If a second witness comes and says that he didn't die, she remains with the original heter and is still allowed to remarry. Taka, like Ula said. Mishnah said, "Eid Oimer Meis." Fechmar, it's obvious that one witness does not believe when he's contradicted by two witnesses. Where it says the Mishnah means that we follow these two, even if they're possible witnesses, like women or slaves. The Chemi said in the Braisa, wherever the Torah believes a single witness, we follow the majority opinion, meaning whichever view has more people. And two women against one man are treated like two men against one man. Another version of the Chemi is that when the Torah believes a single witness, if the single witness is a valid witness, then even if 100 possible witnesses contradict them, they're considered to be as one witness as well. Our Mishnah is discussing with a single witness that came initially was a possible one, and then two possible witnesses contradicted the first. And it's only in such a case, Rabbi Nechemiah said, that we follow the majority opinion, the one that has more people with that same view. However, where it's one valid witness against two possible witnesses, it would be considered as a case of equal testimony on each side. The Mishnah then said, "Shnayim oimer meitz v'chulu." What's the chiddush here? It can't be that we're dealing with possible witnesses and are following Rabbi Nechemiah, because that was the previous case of the Mishnah. So Mara says we would have thought that we only follow the majority opinion when it leads to a chumra, not to a kula. The Mishnah therefore teaches us, even so, when it leads to a kula, to a leniency.